how did you get into GRC?
I started out basically as a fraud analyst at American Express. And I was pursuing that. There was a certain situation at work that needed a lot of investigation. So it was pretty much a guest that we had that was causing like a fraud ring around American Express with different gold cards and platinum cards and different users. So it was this really big project they were working on. Involved legal and arresting them. I was just very interested in like how you stole passwords, how did you hack this account, how did this person know you? And from being on that project, I got into compliance and risk, and that's what started my GRC journey. But how do you navigate GRC? You keep reading, you keep studying, you keep taking courses, you keep updating on frameworks. I think frameworks is just big. As long as you update yourself on those frameworks and you apply and you do some projects, you'll be fine.
I guess what type of jump did you experience from technical recruiting at a FANG to jumping into GRC?
I think I touched, when I first started, I was at 110. And then I would say the biggest jump I made was about close to 100,000. 220, 250, highest. My aim one day is to touch 300. You know, 300, 350.
This video is being brought to you by Level Up in Tech. It's Q3 in 2024, but you still have time to get into the cloud. With the quick search for cloud in Indeed, you can see over 44,000 jobs are listed that is related or pertaining to the cloud. Now, that is a lot, but if you're watching this right now, you might be thinking, well, how do I learn the skills to get into the cloud? Well, we got you covered. Level Up in Tech is one of the best, if not the best, program related to getting people into the cloud. At Level Up in Tech, you can learn about server config and troubleshooting, the AWS cloud, infrastructure as code, CI/CD, scripting, containerization, and more. And also, they now also have a new multi-cloud AI engineering program that is dedicated to help you have the latest and greatest skills to help you be marketable in this tech market. They post more testimonials than almost any program that I could think of. Check them out. Now, if you're ready to start your cloud career today, then use the link in my description to go to levelupintech.com/tech so you can start your career. And plus, they'll know that I sent you. But on to the video. Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got a lovely guest for you all today. I've been calling her the AD, but you probably know her as AD on Twitter, where she's always dropping a lot of gems on getting into GRC and job searching and pretty much anything else that's really current in the workforce. But if you are watching us on YouTube, like most of you do, please subscribe, hit the bell icon to be notified when we're dropping all content. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, follow us, leave a comment. It really helps us out in the podcast analytics. But it's been a long time coming. How you doing, Miss AD?
I'm doing great. Fabulous. How you doing?
Pretty good.
That's excellent.
I thought about a joke, too. You was like, nobody knows my real name and all this other stuff. I was like, she was used to be like so mysterious on the timeline. And I think I came across you like, not by accident, but you were posting something. Like I always, if somebody like posting some really good info, I said, cool, this is somebody to follow.
It was acts of purpose. Yeah.
So, it was acts of purpose. I think you was posting some good stuff about GRC, which we will definitely get into. But for the people who are not on Twitter and are not the baddies in DC, mm-hmm. could you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah. So everyone, I'm AD or Aria Imagine on Twitter. I would say I'm multifaceted. I talk about GRC, but instead of just basically just always talking about the simple frameworks and test questions and like the basics, I dig into real life scenarios, like on the job, how things are done, how things are implemented, how you go about them, just to give you like a real life feel for everything in the field. So you can actually get a better understanding of how things are actually put into place. And then also doing job search strategy for clients. I've been doing this since college years. I used to host resume workshops and I was a technical recruiter at Amazon. And I just feel I wanted to create a space for everyone to have a lot of free information, understand different techniques and tools to use to find jobs. The job market, yes, is terrible, but there's still ways and things that you can do to tweak finding a job to secure you something under the belt. And that's just what brings me here. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. And so with that being said, we're going to get right back into the conversation of telling us about your lovely lovely like journey. Like what made you the last, 3 to 4 years, mm-hmm. all the rage has been cybersecurity. Then you got all these other influencers. Get into GRC. You don't need nothing, some study. Yeah. But before we get into all that fun stuff, how did you get into GRC?
So this is a very interesting story. When I got into GRC, it was not like, hey, this is GRC. I started out, a quick summary, basically as a fraud analyst at American Express. And when I was doing that type of work, I got my bachelor's in physiology. So I attempted to be a physician assistant or a nurse. And then I got into whatever position hired me at the time after college, and I got to be a fraud analyst. And when I was pursuing that, there was a certain situation at work that needed a lot of investigation. So I actually did beyond my job outlook. I would say that I asked my manager, I'm like, hey, can I get on this project? It was something that they were working on and they needed more hands-on and they had to do an investigation. It was pretty much a guest that we had that was causing like a fraud ring around American Express with different gold cards and platinum cards and different users. So it was this really big project they were working on, involved legal and arresting them. So that piqued my interest. I was just very interested in like how you stole passwords. How did you hack this account? How did this person know you? And from being on that project, I got into compliance and risk. And that's what started my GRC journey. And I know that there's a lot of talks about you don't need any experience or anything like that. I will say that at the time, did I understand frameworks? No, I just was on the project. I knew that frameworks existed, NIST, all of that, but I didn't know how everything tied into one another. I will say that I wanted to get more into it. I wanted to work my way up in the company. And as hard as I tried to move up in the company, it just wasn't working. Lateral promotions, trying to apply to different positions, they just knew me already and knew that I didn't have to them those credentials to move into that position that would further me into GRC. So I got another position. I went to Amazon, became a technical recruiter. Funny enough, I was recruiting for a lot of cybersecurity positions as well as data engineering. And upon looking at all the cybersecurity positions, that's where I actually met with hiring managers and I sat in on pods and I understood frameworks. I had to learn what frameworks were, what they did. I sat in on assignments and projects and I listened to interviews of people talking about projects that they did from internships or from their mentors and just trying to get into the field. And that's when I learned about GRC, the different titles, compliance, risk, analyst, being a subject matter expert overall. And that's what helped me get into that. And then I also took a leap of faith. I weaned myself off of technical recruiting for a little bit. And I was like, I'm going to dedicate the next 6 to 7 months learning. At first, I tried to self-learn different courses online, and there weren't too many things with GRC back then, honestly speaking. You have Coursera and you have Google and everything like that. ChatGPT was non-existent at that time. So I didn't have ways. I had to go on Google and search. I actually went to my county in Florida and they have, I'm not sure if I'm saying it correctly, a Wyoa grant program. And I applied to the grant program. I wrote like my application and everything like that. And I think after a month or two, it was a very tedious process. It's not something that you just go on and just get it done, but you just do what you have to do to fill out the paperwork, talk to they have counselors that you get assigned. And throughout the whole process, I got accepted into a program. Within that program, they had cybersecurity. So that comes with your certifications, your CompTIA, your Security Plus, your A Plus, your networking. You could choose which ones you wanted to actually sit for when you finish, but just the Capricorn in me, I wanted to do all of them just so I could get them under my belt. Not saying you have to do every CompTIA certification. It's always important to make sure that the ones that you do are fit for the role or the path that you need to do what you have to do. But I knew Security Plus was my foot in the door just based off of research and being on Reddit and just doing my own research and just talking to other people that was actually in the field. I did that. I gave myself 7 months. I finished within 5.5 months. And then I applied towards the end of my studies and finished the program. And that's how I got into GRC. And then I became a GRC analyst at first. So that's how we did that. And that's what brings me here. Nice. That's my journey. Yes.
And I could tell that's the Cliff Notes version.
The very Cliff Note, because it's intense.
No, it's cool. I like on this channel, we always try to bring people over that have different type of, it's no one way to get into cybersecurity. And I think what you went through is what most people went through. Your job blocking on you. Mm-hmm. And that makes you say, okay, I got to go elsewhere.
And I'm thankful for that. Yeah.
No, you're right. Yeah. When I'm doing consultations mm-hmm. with people and I say, have you tried to network within the company and ask people? And they say, yeah, my manager knows I want to do this and that. And I'll be like, all right, that's good and all, mm-hmm. but you have to bypass them because they're not as invested in you as you are invested in you.
They're not. And when I they see you elevating too, that's hard because it's like I came in with one resume. They already know me. They know what I'm doing. They know where I've been. They know my department. They know my work ethic. So not saying it was bad, but it was like, we know you don't know frameworks. We know you don't have the essential core tools yet. You're like, you're just getting into the project that is interesting and something you want to pursue. So should we take a chance on you was how they were feeling. And I didn't have the time to keep going back and forth and try to do this. So I was just like, all right, I'm going to try one more time. And if I'm not able to do it, then I'm just going to go. I'm just going to find out how I can get it. And I felt deterred at the time because I felt like I went backwards. How did I go from fraud analyst, then I went to a technical recruiter? But lo and behold, just faith of a mustard seed, God had a different plan. I did that and I was recruiting for cybersecurity. And I thought I was just going to recruit for those roles and that was it. But no, I had to study. I had to go learn what candidates knew these frameworks. How were they implemented? So I studied upon studying. Then I got myself into a program and then I moved my way forward. So it wasn't an off track. It was just a different route to take to get into it.
No, for sure. The fact that, and I hate when they do that, like mm-hmm. they always talk about, oh, we move people around internally. You're going to have to pay this person for externally more money than you're going to have to pay me.
Yeah, they phase you out. They really don't. It was very difficult. And I knew a lot of people. I'm a networker. I knew managers. I knew the person of the department. When I got on that project, that was someone I was working with that was close to the hiring manager, but they want someone else. They want someone outside with that experience coming into the business. And even though they promise you that you can move up in the company, not for positions like that, not for those high level positions like that.
Yeah, it's their loss though, but that was your villain origin story. Mm-hmm. So that's actually cool too, that you got pretty much in that first instance, mm-hmm. a glimpse of what could happen working in GRC. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people too, is like in cybersecurity, all these different roles intersect sometimes for different things. Like I've met with a matter of fact, I think she works for Dell. She's a lawyer for Dell. And then she does mm-hmm. like their contracts and all the other different stuff, like on the tech side.
Okay.
And I always tell people like how you can have many different roles. That's not mm-hmm. really a traditional role, but it could be in the realm of cyber.
Right.
But you just got to go do the research. And I think a lot of people are really not doing the research. Mm-hmm. They want to be spoon fed the information. Oh, or yeah, if you didn't put it on a tweet or yeah. something, send me the link, that type of stuff.
That's easier now too, though. You want to be spoon fed, but now you have ChatGPT. Now you have AI. Now you have things that are like right in front of your face. I didn't have anyone to ask any questions. I didn't have anyone to guide me. I just had Google, Reddit.
Yeah.
The internet. I had to put things together. I had to take notepads and be like, okay, do I start here? Where does this certification lead me to? Is this actually used? And I had to ask people at work while trying not to be obvious that I'm about to leave. Like, what did you use to get here in this position? How did you do that? So I had to figure it out. I just spent a lot of time figuring it out. And I don't think there's no certain path to getting to this position or any position. Sometimes you figure things out and put it together.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Time and place, time and mm-hmm. time for everything. So what I'll say is first, before we get into some of those skill questions, mm-hmm. that GRC role, what was that like? What was like a day in the life like for you in that role?
Hectic. So I would say that a lot of people don't do onboarding. They, in a lot of positions, onboarding is not, I came in, it was chaotic. And I'm saying that it was chaotic because I didn't have onboarding. They basically just came on and were like, okay, get a hold of, meet all the team members, meet all the stakeholders, just meet with everyone and see what everyone needs. It was very vast. So I had to take on a role of getting everything under my belt. I had to take my own notepad and I'm like, okay, I'm going to meet with this person. I'm going to ask, what are the challenges? I'm going to ask, what's required of me? Always keep your job description handy because like they just threw me out there and I was like, so what do I do? And they were looking at me like they didn't really have a path or things for me to do. So the first 30, 60 days I spent acclimating myself to the environment, learning what they had put in place, what the issues were, who I need to talk to, who do I work alongside with, understanding the whole entire cybersecurity team. And I also spent a lot of time volunteering on projects. I didn't actually get my hands really dirty or doing what I wanted to do probably towards the end of the year. I sat alone in a lot of projects, asking questions, shadowing. I finally got a chance to shadow. That wasn't given to me. I asked for that. So it was not like they were like, hey, come work alongside so-and-so. It was more like I saw projects on the board and I was like, who can I sit alongside with to understand how this works better? And that's what got me out of the space of feeling like, okay, I'm lost. What do I need to do? How do I get started? And that's how I started getting my hands on. And every day was different. One day I'm meeting with people. The next week we have meetings from Monday through Friday, 2-3 hours each, trying to figure out what frameworks are going to fit into what position, like what we were doing. It was a lot. My first position had me contemplating, is this something that I wanted to do? Because this is completely different than what I was working on when I wasn't in the position for real. But every company has a different approach to how they do things and how they want things done. And I think once I understood that, I'm a job hopper. So I leave for the bag. So if one company is just a little fishy for me, I've been to enough companies to understand that they all have different outlooks and steps and ways they want to approach how they want to go about GRC and implementing anything like that.
Nah, you spot on. You start something chaotic. I thought about mm-hmm. my first job at McAfee at the time and just chaotic, like no training. Mm-mm. Still to this day, no training. And I tell people that a lot. I think I can't remember what episode I was doing or talking to somebody, and I was to them like, "I'm just gonna keep the bean with you, chief." I'm just not gonna give you no real training. I was like, I can't tell you the last time I was trained. I probably showed 2 days. Like, this is where this is and this, but get to work. I was like, you are in a beautiful position if you got a company that got a training plan for you.
Right.
One of my recent clients, he just started at Yahoo. But a couple of weeks ago, and he laid me, I said, we got, I think, 3 months or something like that where he trained, he's going to be on day shift doing this and this. I was like, yeah, that's a good company. I say a lot of people not getting that. They might get a week or two, if that, and just thrown in the fire. And I'm like you too. If I'm seeing it ain't is, it's not what it's supposed to be, I'm definitely looking. I'm shopping around. I'm always applying.
And you know what I had to do too? It's not funny now that I think about it. I took like my job description. Okay, because I always keep that on handy because I always make sure that I'm not doing more than what was asked of me. If stuff starts sounding funny, I'm like, was this originally discussed? Is this on my duties? Is this in the scope that says and more? If it says and more, I'm really weary. And more what? I need to make sure that everything's aligned. And when I think about it, I made my own plan of like how I want to come in on Mondays, what I want to address on Tuesdays, what I want to do on Wednesdays, how I want to end my week. I'm thinking about my typical day was never the same because I schedule myself. So I'm like, okay, so when I come in, I want to review any alerts, any incidences. I have morning meetings with my team, my check-ins, discuss any projects, any compliance deadlines, or anything that we need to meet. I might review some progress on like policy implementations, discuss the results of an assessment. And then this is like throughout my day because it keeps me grounded despite the meetings that I have to. Mid-morning, maybe I'm like doing my risk assessment. So I know right before lunch, I'm doing all my risk assessments, my audits that I need to do, anyone I need to contact. I might review access controls. And then after lunch, I did all that grunt work. Now I want to update risk registers, maybe just document and log some things like that. And then towards the end, I might meet with another department, see what's happening. I didn't get that from anyone else. I got that because after observing the environment and talking with everyone, I'm like, okay, so if I structure myself and I come in from the weekend, this is what's going to help me phase out like everything for the week. And then when I have my one-on-ones, which I had to schedule on my own, they were not scheduled for me. I was able to back myself up. This is what I did. This is what was done. This is what I assessed. This is what I figured out. And I had that for myself just to back myself up because a lot of times no onboarding, no type of schedule. It's really nothing. It's just like a free-for-all kind of.
Yeah, for sure. I know you got to be your biggest advocate.
Mm-hmm. You got to. Yeah, absolutely.
I tell them, look, from the inception of the first call, or if we're going to do coaching, whether it's big or small, every little thing you did down.
Yeah, everything.
Put all them things in JIRA so you can say, hey, this is why I need a raise. I did 100 things this year and I knocked them
even
all
the stuff
out.
Not in JIRA. I call it a brag sheet. Mm-hmm. I talk about it on Twitter all the time. I'm like, y'all don't forget to write on your brag sheets because that's important. One time I was using something I wrote somewhere else and I pulled up my brag sheet. I was like, oh, I forgot three amazing things that I did this past quarter. Let me go update you. And that helped. Everything that you've done helps. So I keep that brag sheet updated. Absolutely.
Yeah. So you said some cool words when you were talking earlier. And I would like for you to tell the audience, what is a risk assessment?
It's a lot of things. how can I break it down?
Just do it in layman's terms. Like you was doing interview questions. Hey, explain to me, what is a risk assessment, as if you were talking to a five-year-old?
Okay. So instead of saying it, what it is actually, I'm just going to speak broadly. So first of all, risk assessments are crucial. In my time of finding out what I need to do, I figure out what part of the day I want to do risk assessments. Just previously being in the position, I've been in positions where people do risk assessments all day. There's no timeline to actually do them, but if you structure yourself out, then that's, you have a time to do risk assessments. And it's pretty crucial. So first, you like identify everything, right? So your first step is to always identify any assets that need to be like protected. Physical, servers, your computers, digital, so customer data, intellectual property. So for example, if I'm assessing a new cloud-based system, the assets might include data stored in the cloud and the applications that are actually running on it. Once that's identified, then we're going to move on to identifying potential like threats and vulnerabilities, which I call like the fun stuff. And threats can be anything from your typical cyber attacks or natural disasters, Florida, hurricanes, hail, anything that can happen. And then that's going to exploit those threats. So for example, again, like if that cloud system that we have lacks that multi-factor authentication, this is now signifying a really big vulnerability because we're lacking that. Once that's done, once we always assess and we figure out like the threats and vulnerabilities and we have them identified, now it's time to assess that type of impact. What's the actual impact and likelihood of these risks actually happening, actually occurring now that we have them identified? And that refers to damages, loss, or anything of that nature. Now, the likelihood is a probability of the risk actually occurring. Cyber attacks happen all the time. But if a cyber attack was to happen on a cloud system, it could have a high impact due to the sensitive data that was involved on it. But if we had a stronger security measure, then that likelihood might be really low. It may not happen at all. Once that's done, then we evaluate like the existing controls. So different places have different controls that are put in place. I just evaluate like technical, like your firewalls, encryption, and then sometimes administrative, which a lot of people overlook, right? So your policies and your training programs, which are pretty crucial. You might think that it's simple, but it's pretty crucial. And it's just really important to determine like how effective these controls are and if there's any gaps that needs to be addressed, which is another thing also. Based on that impact from that, right, and the likelihood and effectiveness of those controls, then I get the risk level. Then I'm like, okay, I can determine what type of risk level that it is. And then this helps prioritize which risks need immediate attention. Like, what do I need to pay attention to first? And then that's used with a risk matrix. It's just to visualize and rank them from like low to high. Once that's done, if you break it down, like just for the mitigation strategies that you have to create afterwards for high priority risks, I develop mitigation strategies to reduce the impact and likelihood. Very important. So this involves like additional security measures, updating policies, even something simple as training sessions help a lot, honestly. So for example, if I was to put that into play, if I identify like a vulnerability in the cloud system's authentication process, a mitigation strategy would involve like implementing MFA, multi-factor authentication, and regular security audits. And you would be surprised how a lot of companies, they don't have that. It's just something that is big, but they still overlook it. And then my favorite part of everything that I will always say in this position is document. And always cover yourself at all times. The entire risk assessment process is documented. And when I say thoroughly, very thoroughly, I create a really detailed report. It includes like risks, their assessed impact, the likelihood, current controls, proposed mitigation strategies. And then this is actually shared with relevant stakeholders, whoever is important or who needs to know what's going on, your IT and your senior management, just to make sure everyone is aware of those risks and like the steps that are being taken to actually mitigate them, because your job is to not implement. You work with other departments to do that. And then the biggest part also that a lot of companies skip that I've witnessed, it's not a one-time thing. You don't just, a risk assessment is just not one and done. You have to continuously monitor those risks and review the effectiveness of those strategies. So regular audits and reviews to help ensure that the new risks are identified and addressed pretty promptly. And it helps the organization stay proactive about managing potential threats. So those are a very nice explanation of risk assessments in a nutshell.
Yeah, that was a good one. Because while you were saying that, I said, I need to follow this up with, you know, what are some of the most significant risks that you see plaguing business today? And how does GRC factor in mitigating some of those? And you kind of touched on one, really.
You mean the cyber attacks?
Yeah. At the crux of everything, some type of way, somebody has gotten access on some server.
Like the AT&T, right? Like the AT&T breach. But there's like that, for example, like there's always breaches. There's always things being stolen, cyber attacks, ransomware, phishing. You get those emails all the time. A lot of people are starting to be like, is this email real? They do them in jobs. They get your information for jobs and stuff like that. You sign up for jobs. They're not really jobs. They're fake postings. They're taking your information. Malware, you're opening stuff up on the computer. You're out in public on public Wi-Fi, opening stuff. It's a lot. And their businesses are really exposed to a lot of that because a lot of their employees, the ones who aren't really like aware of their surroundings or aware of security like that, just exposes them to a lot of things like that. Weak passwords, unpatched software. It's the little things. It's not just phishing emails. So it's a lot of things put into play, honestly.
Yeah, I see right now the biggest vulnerability most companies probably has is if employees, well, really two things. You can go from your work phone to your personal phone. Find those numbers. And they're able to trick you to, hey, scan this QR code or click on this. By the time the company figures out you've been compromised, it's too, well, it's not too late. If you got a good security operations, it's going to say, hey, we got unusual logon right here. Yeah. Now, you can put blocks in place on that, on the like IAM side, like to block that. But you might run into a lot of people being unhappy with getting their stuff blocked just because it's unusual. I think I would like block it if they kept on failing like MFA or something like that. But that's what I've been seeing so far. It's okay. We know that the, most of the time the environment is ironclad. We're going to try to get in a different way. And like you were talking about earlier, documentation, admin processes, offboarding. Sometimes people got access to the environment. They didn't quit like 30 days ago. All that type of stuff that, that some people don't think about. Or like you brought up hurricanes like Houston and everyone else had these hurricanes. Hey, where are their data centers located? Are they affected? What's going on? When are we going to be up to business?
When you, by the way, when you were talking about people getting offboarded, there was a situation where if you get a nice MacBook, you get a nice PC, when you leave, the department didn't really do a good job at the inventory. Something as small as inventory is huge. Yeah. That there was a whole situation that person ended up with a MacBook Pro. He was gone for over 120 days and there was a data breach. I don't know, wherever he went to go get it wiped clean or something, they took the information from that laptop. They did not wipe it clean and that started this whole thing and then he got in trouble for that. But simple things like that, like just inventory.
Where he took it to get it wiped at? Did he go overseas?
They didn't really release that. I feel like he did go overseas. He didn't want to do it here in the US. I feel like he did that overseas and because why else would you want the information? And it was exposed pretty quickly. And it started by shutting down systems and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that before, too. Or on the other end, of one of the funny things is like notifying people internally of like credentials or stuff being compromised and have them tell them stuff, but in a way where you're not telling them everything. So you can't tell them. So they start going and talking like, hey, yeah, this happened. No, just do it. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, cool. Like just getting them keep talking, but getting them to just do what you need them to do and get on with everything. So I definitely think too. It's one of the things, especially when we, like you're talking about two security awareness training. So we say, hey, I wasn't trained on that, or my security awareness training didn't address that, which at this point I really don't understand. I do understand somebody got to put the money behind it, but I would love to make like better security awareness that's actually interesting. Imagine if it's a security awareness training and whoever watching this don't not take my idea, or if y'all do, I just want to pay from it. But if it's security awareness, but it's like a show or something you watch it, but you're doing challenges in the show or whatever it is, something like that maybe could be interesting.
I was going to say.
The same old thing we always see.
Yeah, I did something like that. It was like a gamification, though. It wasn't really a show. It was game. I like gamification.
Yeah.
So don't steal the idea. Don't steal the idea. But no, it's a gamification. I want to say a company that I worked at actually has something like that. Very interactive. You normally get into companies like, oh, watch your security training videos and they're boring. You sit there and you watch them. But this one was like challenging, like it was a game version and you had to pick a character and you had to do. And it was fun. But you also got to actually learn terms. Like you understood like why clicking an email that might look suspicious was actually very detrimental to the company versus just like it helped you learn a lot more and retain that actual information too. Because it made me like second think when I'm like opening links, wait a minute, does that look right? Does that URL look right? And stuff like that. So it helped a lot.
Yeah, I see so much phishing now. And the people now know that there are tools that block these things. So a lot of times, what people do, and I'm going to make this easy for people to understand, what the attackers do is they don't come right out the gate with the attack. They just try to email you long enough till you have a conversation with them so they can probably do some reconnaissance, gather information. It's ladies, it's similar to if it's an ex you don't talk to no more, but he's trying to see like how much he can actually converse with you before he get blocked or something like that. So it's the same way. They're doing the same thing before they make their move, because it's not an if, but it's a when. We all know whatever he texting you for, he into it with the chick he with, or he seen on your story, you at your favorite spot. Shoot, the attacks do the same thing, especially if they doing sophisticated attacks where they know you are the person that works in finance and you deal with sending these transfers and these invoices to people and getting money, and they're trying to get you to change those credentials to theirs so they can get the money.
Yeah.
We see that all the time. So hopefully y'all understood that analogy.
Yeah.
So one of the things I was going to ask you is, I guess, some about the frameworks that you've used. Maybe give like an example of one framework and then how you used it at work.
I had a note on this. I use a lot of frameworks. All right, let me talk about the notorious NIST, NIST. So in my first, as an analyst, actually, when I finally got my hands on to actually be able to finally do things, we had to secure a lot of IT infrastructure, a lot of sensitive customer information, critical business operations. So we had to implement NIST to manage and mitigate a lot of cybersecurity risks. So the steps that were taken, high level. So I had to catalog all IT assets. I'm talking about hardware, software, data, systems, servers, endpoints, cloud services, anything critical applications, all of that. And I had to understand the role of these assets within the business process. It doesn't make sense to take inventory of all of that and not know how they work, right? Or not understand which assets were like most critical to business and stuff like that. So you need to know their functions and how they play a role in the business. Then I had to conduct like a very comprehensive risk assessment, what we discussed earlier, way more in depth, to identify other threats and vulnerabilities. And this involved analyzing even past incidents. So before I even got there, I had to go analyze what happened in the past before I got here, potential threat vectors and vulnerabilities that were in our system. I had to study those as well. Once that was done, I established like a governance structure for cybersecurity. So defining like the roles and responsibilities, almost like a RACI chart that just helps you identify who's responsible for what. When this happens, who do we talk to? How do we get this situated? Just to make everything more organized and easier. And of course, we had to appoint, and we already had our CISO, our Chief Information Security Officer. Once that was done, I implemented like strong access control measures. So MFA, multi-factor authentication, and also most importantly, role-based access controls, which is RBAC, just to limit access to sensitive data, was not implemented. A lot of companies don't really think about role access. A lot of people have access to things they shouldn't have. They only know that when they start clicking around on things, when touching things, they don't automatically know that until they start doing things, and they shouldn't be able to have that access. And as we talked about security awareness training earlier, I rolled out like a security awareness training program for all employees tailored to different roles within the organization. So that took time as well. This was phishing simulations, and they were actually, they were tricky. They're made to be tricky on purpose a little bit, just so you can practice understanding and identifying like when emails come in, just to be aware, just to be on your toes. So the phishing simulations are actually very challenging, to say the least, and just best practices for data protection overall. I enhanced the data encryption both in transit and at rest, basically just enhancing data security, right? So encryptioning emails, securing data transfers within VPNs, virtual private networks. So employees who travel, some of them go on VPN networks, or some people who are not supposed to travel go get on VPN networks, and that could be a risk also as well. That's a different topic. But once that was done, I developed and documented a lot of policies for handling and protecting information. So data classification policies, incident response plans are huge to have. I created templates for that and procedures for secure software development as well. Once that was done, I set up systems and with the team, of course, to monitor network traffic and user behavior for anomalies and just strange behavior. And this involved like deploying like a lot of intrusion detection systems and security information and event management tools. And I established a monitoring program just to regularly check for security incidents and automated alerts and regular audits to help us stay on our toes, to watch out for things that come about that we don't see all the time. And then I feel like it's really important to have a formal process for detecting and reporting security incidences, which is not always implemented at every company. So this included clear escalation plans and paths and things to do and predefined response actions. Once that's done, I think we're on to the respond part. Once that's done, you develop and test a lot of incident response plans. So this is a plan that outlines like all the steps for containing and mitigating security incidences, any communication protocols, recovery procedures. And then it's really important that during an incident that you have communication, right? So during incidences, we have to have that predefined communication strategy to inform stakeholders, employees, customers, regulators. As soon as anything happens, we're supposed to communicate, and there's a proper way to address everyone without panic and stuff like that. So we put that into place. And then we have immediate steps that were taken to contain and mitigate those incidences. And that includes also maybe having to include isolating like affected systems, applying patches, even restoring for backup if we have to. And then we use insights from previous incidents as well to continually improve like our security posture. So updating policies, like I was saying earlier, enhancing training and refining detection and response processes. And then the last phase I would say is like recovery. So I'm really big on having a disaster recovery plan just to restore operations quickly after an incident, because I've been in positions where after one is everyone's frazzled. Like they don't know what to do. There's no plans put in place. Everything's back to like negative square one, not even at square one. And it's important to review and improve those strategies as things happen. And we learn from incidences that happen and base it on what worked the first time, what didn't work, and what we didn't try. And then we have our post-recovery that we communicate with stakeholders and just have that transparency. So all in all, I would pretty much say that NIST improves security posture. I know that from using it from my previous experience, it just reduces cyber attacks being so successful. It's just quicker detection and response times and increased employee awareness, because once the employees, a lot of things happen because a lot of employees may allow that door to be open. So when that is put in place, it makes it a little bit easier to have that done. So that's how we use NIST. That was my very first time using NIST and understanding that framework and how to implement it. Very thorough, very detailed. Of course, it's a lot more, but that's a NIST framework.
No, I mean, do I have my hand clap things over here? I definitely give a round of applause for that. Matter of fact, let me see what I got over here. Give you that. Never mind, it's not showing up. No, you gave a masterclass on that, because I've been asked before on interviews about the incident response process. And yeah, and then
that's like a nutshell, because it's thorough and it's in depth and it's okay. But the fun part is you always have guidance. It's not like you have to know this at the top of your head. You have templates, you have things online, you have controls that you actually, it's almost like plug and chug. You're not really doing this from scratch. It's not difficult at all. It's just protocols that you follow.
Yeah, definitely. And then while you were talking, I was just thinking about when we were responding, and based on the magnitude of it, how many updates we do and who has to be included. And if it's this application or whatever, what stakeholders do we include in this message? Mm-hmm. And like you say, our lessons learned after whatever's happening that we put these new rules into to monitor for, or reach out to these people, or everything always comes together. And I think one of the biggest issues sometimes when it comes to cybersecurity programs is people are trying to have everybody in too many silos. And that's why you have incidents. Whereas you need to have, if it's once a week or once every 3 weeks or once a quarter, all the teams need to just have some type of stand up and talk about what they're working on.
Absolutely.
to just know what
get on the same page.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think that's what probably what the leaders do all day, just to make sure. Because then based on your industry will also determine your crown jewels or the things that you care about. Going into my next question was about like, how do you keep up with the latest cyber attacks and trends? See, you could have just plugged my show in. Like, I watch your show. That's how I keep up.
I do, but I have you on Twitter as well. So I see everything, but I'm nosy. So I'm going to always keep up with things that's in the cyber news. You know how you open up your phone and you go to, I have Google, and then the Google tab. I think I curated my Google to have updated news. Every time I open it, it's just all cybersecurity. It's all tech. Besides being in like different groups that I'm in, yeah, I just have industry news and publications on my phone, whether it's CSO Online or Google News. I'm a part of professional organizations like ISACA and ISC2 and the SANS Institute. And then you go on LinkedIn every now and then you see things or news. But I'm also on a lot of security forums and communities as well. So that allows me to see a lot of activities on subreddit and Stack Exchange. I like threat intelligence, so I think that's why I also look at things like vendors like Palo Alto and FireEye and Semantics, just things like that. And then I used to do like reports. Like I used to, I'm not going to say be in charge for my brag sheet. I used to get like a compilation of information, and probably on Fridays I would blast it out on a work blog, and I was known for always having updated information for the week for everyone to know. So things like that.
Nice. Yeah. I don't mean to tell people they want to keep up, so join my Slack space. I got this security news channel. That's a lot of them topics that we bring up on the show. Like they come right here and I'm sending them over to Destiny. I was like, yo, look at this. I remember we talked about this and now they're updating this on this. Cause like we covered AT&T 2 months ago. And then even 2 months ago, last year, Eric and I covered AT&T breach. So keep on getting breached. Remind me of T-Mobile. So.
Oh yeah.
And absolutely. I heard some people been getting fired over there too from AT&T.
Yeah.
So that definitely sucks because at the end of the day, sometimes it's not even the little people. Somebody who is in charge is their fault.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
All right. So here's a fun one. We always talk about this. And this is an impromptu question, so you don't necessarily have notes on this.
Okay.
Should a person go to school? And I won't necessarily say for GRC because I don't know if there are any GRC degrees. But should a person that wants to get into GRC get some type of formal education, or should they just go to the certifications that they always try to tell you to get into GRC?
So this is actually, it's funny. I stay out of this conversation just for two reasons. I have degrees. I'm degreed up. I will honestly say that I only say that because even though my bachelor's is different from my master's, I got my master's in like computer science. That was after I decided that's what I wanted to do. And then I did information assurance and cybersecurity. Those weren't always majors back then. Those are new and upcoming. So I decided just to do that just because I like school. I like learning. A degree gives you a solid foundation and a broad understanding of the field. Right. So a degree in info security or cybersecurity or info systems, it can cover like a wide range of topics, right? So risk management, network security, ethical hacking, and it includes hands-on labs and projects, some of them, not all of them. That's things that you have to figure out. And it opens doors to a variety of roles. And it's often a requirement for more advanced positions. I can honestly say, knock on wood, all the positions I've had, of course, they do background checks and they see like where you went to school and everything like that. But they did not prioritize a degree. Honestly speaking, I didn't start putting my master's information onto my resume for a bit. I used to think that it would make me almost look overqualified. A lot of positions, I felt like they just were like, oh, no, she's going to want too much or anything like that. So I didn't put that on there for a while. I'm going to say certifications, on the other hand, they give you more specialized knowledge, right? So now there's more though. Now back then you weren't going to just get up and say, oh, I'm just going to go get a certification in this. And they have certificate programs and stuff like that, but they just weren't sought after like that. If I was originally going back to high school, graduating, and there were programs like that, and my guidance counselor told me about that, which they didn't, I would have pursued a certification. And I would have seen where that took me. I wouldn't have said that I would not have gotten a bachelor's degree or a master's degree. I like school. I most likely would have continued to pursue my education, but I would have seen where that would have got me without debt, without so much debt, I would have seen. That's just my prerogative. But certs are quicker, more flexible, easier to obtain compared to a degree. It depends on your path. I tell my clients all the time, it's not a rush. If you are looking to do something within the next 6 to 7 months and you're challenging yourself and you want to make a career change within a year or so, then absolutely go do a cert program. If you want to take your time and thoroughly get the foundation and see where it takes you and do projects, and maybe that program or that degree program comes with your be able to sit for the exams as well. Also, then do that too. There's no formal path. I'm not going to say one is better than the other. It just depends on what you're doing. There's plenty of people who go sit for CISA or CISSP or get your certified in risk and information systems control. But then once they pass it, they can't get a job, or they get a job and they don't know how to do the work because they haven't done the grunt work. They don't understand the foundation. You just studied to get the cert, to get your foot in the door, but now you can't do the work. Now you can't show the work when you actually get on the floor and do what you have to do. So it's beneficial. Degrees are beneficial. Certs are, you know, beneficial for that in-depth knowledge and demonstrating like that expertise in one area. And it shows that, hey, I'm committed to learning, committed to the work. I'm certified in this. I'm knowledgeable. But in an ideal scenario, what I tell everyone, it depends on also what your background is. Combining both, it's the best of both worlds. If you've already have a degree, like my bachelor's, I wasn't going back to go get a bachelor's in IT. I was like, this is a physiology degree. So we're going to use it. I'm going to go ahead and take whatever classes I need to, but I'm going to learn how to speak in my interviews. I'm going to make sure I do projects. I'm going to make sure I do hands-on so I can explain myself during interview. It's different between just answering behavioral questions. But when it gets technical, how did I implement it? How did I do this? How did I change the business with this framework? So when you do stuff like that, then absolutely they see that means nothing to them. As long as you can exemplify that you can actually do the work and perform the duties and make a change, you know, personal circumstance depends on what you want to do. They both have their own advantages.
This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team, that would be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show.
No, I agree. Ironically, when you were talking, I was starting thinking about doing these consultations with the people who didn't go to school. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about how you may be in more competition for certain roles because all the people who didn't go to school are trying to get those roles. People who at least got the bachelor's qualify for some roles you don't, just because some companies have a hard requirement, like certain industries, what healthcare and what some government jobs, mm-hmm. not all of them, but they have a hard requirement for having a degree. And no matter what the degree is, just it's not right. Bachelor's. Right. And so I started to see that as things are phasing out more and more, you're having a lot of people starting to speak up on some of the certifications are useless. They need to be more hands-on so people mm-hmm. can have some type of aptitude to say they know how to do something. I'm seeing sort of a shift where it's like half and half, where, you know, yeah. certifications or build up on your skills, or mm-hmm. at least, like you say, when you go to college, it rounds out that experience and helps you out in some different ways. Mm-hmm. And so I'll just say, I always say this for everybody, do what works for you.
Yeah, because you can get caught up in like the he say, she say, because like the market perception, they're going to favor candidates. Just think about it. Degrees are favorable. That's just what they want you to do when you come out of school. They want you to go to school. They want you to spend money, get in debt, do what you have to do. You're favored automatically with degrees, especially for entry-level positions. It just shows that you have that foundational knowledge, right? And employers are going to possibly want degree holders because they feel like you might have that comprehensive understanding of various aspects of cybersecurity or risk management or whatever that you're doing. Because how do you explain also, I remember I had an interview and then she asked me, she was like, you have a bachelor's in physiology. How did that translate? How does that work with cybersecurity? And I was like, honestly speaking, they don't correlate, but the transferable skills that I've learned, attention to detail, I've learned how to research, I learned how to navigate that, because that was my thing when they started paying attention to what you majored in. So first it was like, oh, a bachelor's. Then they were like, okay, it's not biology, it's physiology. But how did you go from that to that? How do we know that this is? So then I had to spend time doing that. So that's what made me say, maybe I need to get a degree. Maybe I need to go sit for my Security Plus or something so I can have that specialized knowledge and skill to top off my bachelor's. It's just an edge. I call it like possibly an edge, but I think your real edge comes from interviewing. As long as you can speak to it and you learn as you go. For me, and I like to apply to positions where I don't fit probably 40% of the criteria, right? They'll be like, you need to have a PhD, like just something crazy. I'm like, I don't have that. I haven't done that, but I'm going to apply. Because when I get in the interview, as long as you can do that 20% and you can sell yourself in the interview, that's all that matters. So honestly, yeah. It's up to you.
That's facts. And that's one of my goals too. It's like, hey, time to get this resume done. All this, my job is to get you to get interviews as quick as possible. Because that's learning experience, no matter what I say. It's showtime once that Zoom meet starts.
Yeah, game phase. Absolutely. Yeah, it just depends. Some people don't have time. Some people are like, I just want to sit for the exam. I just want it on my resume. I want to say that I sat for it and I did it and call it a day. They just want to have it and that's it. And you have those who've never sat for the exam and they could sell themselves. I didn't get my CISO or anything until... I got it because I was like, maybe I should have it because I've been doing this now. They didn't ask me. They would be under requirements and preferred, and I bypassed all of that. CISSP2, that wasn't on my plan. I don't like taking tests.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I plan on trying to get into CISSP by September, but I just got to keep studying.
Yeah. I just.
Just focus on the domains I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a lot. If you're great at test taking, sure, why not? I just didn't feel like at that time I was like, it's not important. But then I was like, that's like a physical trainer not looking the physical part. Like, maybe I should possibly look like the product I'm trying to sell. So I'm like, maybe I should actually try to get those certs just in case. Knock on wood, they haven't really asked me for anything like that and anything. So I just have it just in case. So
right. All right. So I know we covered what you should and shouldn't do, but what are the typical certifications that you see on some GRC job applications? And we just do it real quick. We don't have to spend a long time.
Yeah. So there's a debate go back and forth about your CompTIA Security Plus. I think it's entry level. I don't think it's nothing negative to have. It's a nice foundational one to get in the door. I always see CISA. It's globally recognized and it focuses on auditing control. I like that better if you want to do like IT auditing. But IT auditing too is great with GRC too. Nothing wrong with that. It helps you understand controls and everything like that. But it's really domain focused. I would say that your CISA, CRISC, that's another one. It just helps you show that you understand how to lead projects, identify and mitigate risks. I love that. And then your CISSP, the big one, very comprehensive. But that requires you to have experience and so like that.
And be endorsed by another person that got the CISSP as well.
Yeah. And CISM, I think those are the top ones. Mm-hmm. And CISM, that's more managing though, the more managing side of the information security. I haven't seen the CISM one on a lot of positions. I've seen them recently when I was doing some for some clients. But honestly, when they put together a lot of job things, I think because I chat GPT everything possibly or whatever, they just put any type of certs that they feel like go for GRC, you know. But it doesn't mean that certs are defining what you know or what you understand or your foundational knowledge. It just shows that you passed your test, but can you actually do the work, you know?
For sure. And to clarify for the people, when you're saying CISA, you're saying Charlie, India, Sierra, Alpha?
Yeah, CISA. Yeah.
Because you know, CompTIA got the CYSA, but you can stay CISA.
I'm not going to tell you what I say that, how I pronounce that. But yeah, I'm talking, specifically CI. Yeah, your Certified Information Systems Auditor, that one. Okay. Yeah, that's your domain ones. I think that's IT governance, systems, lifecycle management. It's five of them.
Yeah, I took enough though. My master's is actually in IT management, so.
Oh, okay.
I took some of those classes, enterprise architecture, I think, and those management classes. And I see a lot of that stuff, the stuff that I do. I don't really do the stuff on a day-to-day, but other jobs, so I've had to reach out to people and get buy-in from the top so we can do this process. We did the same type of things in master's programs, which is why every time y'all hear me on here, I don't tell people to get a master's, but I do love master's curriculums from good schools.
From good schools, yeah.
Over bachelor's, because that's another thing too. They were having
it depends on the curriculum. Right. Because I don't think I would have got, I only did master's because I wasn't going back to a bachelor's. Like I wasn't going to go back to go do 4 years of work to go do that. Right. I was just like, I already have one. So let me go ahead and get it in this version. Because sometimes in your bachelor's, you get more foundational like work to do. And master's is like a high level overview of everything. It just depends on your program. So that depends also.
What are some of the more challenging aspects of a GRC like career or job?
You know, it's funny. Everyone talks about like getting in GRC, but no one talks about staying in. We don't really talk about balancing what you need to know, how often you need to know, when you shine, when you turn your shine down. Like, we don't really talk about any of that. I think a lot of challenges in GRC is finding balance. Balance with that, and also just balance with business needs and staying on top of things. Like, and I know for an example, like on the job example, I know I had an implementation of something. I think it was GDPR. We had to do like an enforcement of data protection measures, right? So it was necessary to comply with the law, but they initially slowed down like some business processes, and balancing the need for compliance without hindering like operational efficiency required careful planning and communication. But it's like at the same token, how would I know that it slowed down? Who do I meet with? Who am I collaborating with? Where are we getting this news from? How do I know the long-term information? So it's almost like, how do you stay abreast, not just knowing the news of GRC, but how do you navigate GRC? There's not really a regulatory way to navigate that. So I think that's just something that is challenging, but doable. You keep reading, you keep studying, you keep taking courses, you keep updating on frameworks. I think frameworks is just big. Just as long as you update yourself on those frameworks and you apply and you do some projects, you'll be fine. And it could be high stressful. I think it also depends on your company. Where I work now, it's not really too high. I'm going to knock on wood before I jinx myself. It's not really too high right now because a lot of things can be like woosahed, like your meetings, depending on which ones you can record or you can't record your meetings, take your notes, do what you need to do, work on, just plan your time effectively. I think a lot of that comes from how you go about your GRC day. I'll say in a nutshell, how you handle your day. Because when I had to figure it out, I had to figure out what I want my schedule to be like. They just want you in meetings and they want the work done, but they don't tell you, of course, how to do it. You have deadlines and stuff, but you don't know. And it could become a high pressure environment for you if you don't plan it out effectively or you don't have a game plan. So that's pretty much it. I think that's the best thing. It has its own set of challenges from balancing, but once you navigate them and you figure out a plan, it's feasible. It's doable. It's not difficult.
Perfect. And you said a magic word while you were talking earlier. And I was just thinking about it because I have these different calls and I give them, and like at a high level, I'll tell them what they could possibly do for a project in GRC.
Okay. But
from your experience, what could somebody do, or what are some projects that they can do in order to show that they understand government's risk and compliance along with the frameworks and things of that nature?
Yeah, I remember I was trying to find different ways to get a position. One job that I had was a contract job. And I know I just wanted some more practice. I know I was really scared because I know my last GRC was at that position at American Express where I was on that project. And then after I did technical recruiting, so I was between learning and the program, we had projects, but not like that. Like I needed more. I would need more to speak to having a revised resume and having my bullet points. I need to speak more to that. So what I did was when I went on, was it Indeed? And I just put in GRC, a company came up. I picked one. And then I applied to it. And then when the recruiter reached out to me, I developed and created like a mock, like comprehensive risk assessment framework for it. Like I just made it for him. Very simple. I did a risk assessment based off information that I found on the internet. Of course, it can't be like really thorough and stuff because I'm not really an employee there. I don't know. But developing a risk register, using the template, tracking risks, making it up, just putting it together helps. It helps with anything. So when I had my interview And after the recruiter and I met with the person before the hiring manager, I was like, this is what I can do. I created this and I saw this. I went to your website and I saw this information and they were like really impressed. That was my first contract position, but they were really impressed because it was just something so simple, but I got practice because then when I got into it, I was like, oh, this is what you really need. Really? I did it already. And it just helped me put more projects and stuff under my belt. You could have a compliance management system, create a system to manage and track like compliance with regulations and standards. So GDPR, CCPA, HIPAA, health hospitals are great ways to start doing your projects a lot. SOX compliance. I have projects for days. I give my clients projects. I give them projects and I do a lot of workshops. I know I wanted to talk about, not here, but I'm just saying, overall, I do a lot of them at my previous position, but I like hands-on workshops, so I do a lot of those. But developing any type of compliance management system to track compliance is good. Assessing levels and security awareness and stuff like that, those are great projects to do. You're never going to forget them. You're never going to forget the steps that you took. You're never going to forget how you implemented it, how you found the information. Risk rate, it's going to stick and it's going to make it a lot smoother and easier when you get into the actual position. And then when you're in the interview, speaking against it and speaking about it, you don't have to say, oh, I created this project. You speak like you actually did the project already on a real life position, and they'll see how you implement it and they'll see that you know that foundational information, and then you're all set. So
thank you for that, those tidbits of information. We definitely have not plugged in your company yet, and we need to plug it in because I know people are going to be trying to get in touch with you after this. Mm-hmm. What is that name? I know I'll have it in the description by the time this is out, but just so I can
let I'll give you the link. But I call it Pursuitly, P-U-R-S-U-I-T-L-Y. So it's a combination. It's a job search strategy. So I have one where I search and apply to jobs for you. And I do that because, you know, I know you've seen the discourse about, oh, I applied to 493 and people are like, oh, I only apply to 5 to 10 jobs a day. And I'm an advocate for hard work. I'm not going to say that you didn't do your best. So I don't know what situation you come from. I understand it's a sensitive situation, but I've been unemployed before. I chose applying to jobs over sleep. I don't sleep till I'm rich. I don't sleep till I have it. So that's just me. I apply to jobs for people because I understand techniques and tools to use, or I try different things, whether it's going on LinkedIn and typing in hire now or hiring now in your state, hiring now in this tool, or you punch in a tool, Jira, or you punch in Confluence and you see who's hiring. Then you filter it out to 7 days or 24 hours. And then you see who's on there. And then you reach out to the person with the hiring manager or recruiter, and you send your resume over, you just do what you got to do. So I do that for people. I do job search strategy calls too. So if you prefer to do it yourself, I'll show you how to like use your job titles you're looking for and not getting caught up in job titles. That's another thing that I talk about. Use your tools and niche down. Your job search becomes a lot easier when you figure out a certain area that you're like really significant in. It makes it a lot easier for you to find things that you need to do. We have that. And then I have my GRC talk where I create roadmaps and really intense plans for people. And they're not challenging. They're just on your time frame. Hey, I have 6 months. Hey, I have 12 months. Hey, I want to do this in a year. And I always say to take your time. It's not a rush because you want to make sure you understand foundational things. So that encompasses Pursuitly. So job searching, career coaching, and then your GRC career coaching as well. So all three.
Cool. We'll definitely have all that information in the description because you're like, oh my God, they've been blowing me up.
Especially I know,
so we know the answers to this already, but what are the newbies doing wrong when it comes to getting into GRC?
They are all over the place. And it's okay. I'm not going to sit here and say that you're necessarily doing it wrong. You just don't. There's no absolute right way to do it. You are just finding yourself in Reddit, on Google, on ChatGPT, on TikTok, listening to different people, starting off one plan, you're buying courses, you're not finishing your courses. You're buying a bunch of courses, you're not finishing. And that's why I tweet how I tweet, because you're buying all these things, you might learn about the framework, but you don't know how to implement it. You've not done a project. You're not sitting down making a game plan. A lot of my clients, no offense or anything like that, they just need that handheld guidance. You know what to do a lot of times. It's a combination of what and how. And when and how does this and how does it apply to everything like that? So they're just all over the place. They're not picking a track and sticking to it. you're looking at salaries and they're picking the salaries based off the titles and they're stuck on the titles. And I'm like, don't be stuck on the titles, because a GRC analyst at American Express is a different GRC analyst at Visa. You may not be doing the same. You could be doing less at Visa and make more, and you're doing way more at American Express. So it's important to understand like job scopes and things like that and things of that nature. So they're just not tunnel vision on information, and being all over the place gets them flustered and tired and annoyed. And then they feel like GRC is hard. It's hard to get into. It's a very vast field, and you can get lost. And that's with anything, getting information and where to start, how to start, and how to get things done. And that's it. And once you just have that guidance, you're pretty much on the roll now. So
I like that you said that, and you were very educated in your response, because me, I say a whole bunch of stuff like a lot of times. I sent you the guy earlier, which I went to his page. He got a lot of experience on his LinkedIn, but I think he's currently looking for a job now. But it just seems like these people, I know what it is though. Like, people have taken all the ways that people would market MLMs to people, for people who don't know what that is multi-level marketing. And they brought it over to career coaching and tech courses. And a lot of times what they do, they do some of the same tactics. And MLM, if you go to any MLM meeting, where, of course, 9 times out of 10, a person met you like at a Starbucks or something, or they see you in the mall, and then they're going to tell you to come to some office where everybody's pumped up. The person talking is going to tell you some sad story and how they found this opportunity and now they make a whole bunch of money. You see the same thing until having money. Yeah. I learned GRC and now I got multiple remote 6-figure jobs, and I'm going to show you how to do that in 10 weeks. But like I said, the one that is just most out of pocket is 45 days to get in multiple 6-figure jobs.
Yeah.
I found out, I think that person is charging like $10,000 or something.
$10,000. When I talked about that Biola grant, I was 110% honest. Use all free resources. The internet is free. ChatGPT is free. I know I always talk about that. And I didn't have that when I was starting out and everything. Google was still free. I put together a curriculum for myself. And then I started going on Coursera and buying courses. And then I was like, okay, I know what I know. What can I do out here that's a program that I could pay for if I had to, or I can get for free, or I can enroll in that can just put everything all together for me so I can do everything I need to do and then go ahead and get me a position and go ahead and get me a job. It's easy though, because when you go look at the comments underneath that stuff and you go see people, oh, interested, show me that one person that's, oh, is it going to be something that you pay for after? And of course it is. Nothing's free for that. But that was like the time we saw something on Twitter where they were like, oh, sign up is $25 to learn cybersecurity. And I'm like, that's on Google.
Yeah.
Create your own curriculum, learn your own stuff. I don't even know how to say the word, mnemonics.
Yeah, mnemonics, where you can remember
that one. how to memorize things like that.
Up for the cyber kill chain, because I was like, I always forget it. But and for me, I don't care about the price. The price is the price, but I feel like what the people should be getting should be worth the price.
Right, that's the issue. And it's that value that you can get. It's not worth the price. A lot of times it's just, don't be out here getting finessed. Don't get finessed.
A money grab.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's the other one I sent you? The guy talking about fast track your way, do all these portfolios, find you a mentor, and boom, you're in GRC.
I was like, let me go see if I can find that. No. Yeah, that one was funny. That one, I don't know. I feel like they just do that for content making, just to get on TikTok. Because he said that one was a network security. Is that what he said?
I looked at it, but then I got off of it.
And everyone in the comments was like, oh, okay, I'm going to do that. Oh, that's fine. I'm just like, no, something's, that's off. That's not even the right. He said something about like network security or something like that. You got to do research to see also. A lot of people just put a lot of fluff, and that's another thing that they get lost in. And I'm not going to say get lost is wrong, because you go and you do your research online and people that you feel like you make and trust, and they're spewing out information and they're just doing it for content or grabs or money. And now you're lost because they gave you some wrong information. So that does tend to happen. But you got to be cautious and take heed when you're taking information. Everything on the internet is not real. You can't listen to everyone. So.
Yeah, that's why I go LinkedIn's, I go see if you did talks anywhere else, and I try to see if it lines up with everything you're saying.
Yeah, that's it.
Because it is easy to trick people. Like, we see the biggest one is, oh, you want to remote? I'm in Italy because I'm in tech. I can do this program and eventually you will be like, be able to like go work from anywhere and work in Italy, mm-hmm. which possibly can happen. But in the way that they advertise it, it's just, okay, bro, I get it. I ain't mad at the hustle. If a sucker gonna pay you $10,000-$15,000 to get into a niche area, GRC, by all means, they're the fool. Yeah. Can't even, I don't think we just cyber met a couple of months ago, but I know one woman, she took this particular program and I seen her for a while acting like she was looking for a job or something. And so I would try to reach out. She got mad when I asked about the program, but I really was just trying to see, yo, everything good? Like, you took this program, you paid this money, it's not helping you? But she was so distraught about the program, she was blocking all her blessings. But I think the thing that was killing me is I'm like the old people a little bit when it comes to people with no experience at all whatsoever, and they're trying to tell everybody, I'm only interested in the remote. I'm like, well, you don't really got the leg to stand on to say that right now. You just need to be able to get in. After you get your
need to get in.
Then yeah, you absolutely. Can yeah. I'm like, that's why you're complaining about not finding a job, but you are limiting your options because you're competing you with flexible. Everybody else.
Yeah. And sometimes too, like a lot of positions I know, like when I do them for my clients, they'll say, work from home, fully remote only. I applied to a position that said hybrid. When they got the call back and they spoke to the recruiter, they were actually just saying, it's actually a fully remote role. She couldn't explain why it said hybrid, but it ended up being a fully remote role. And that worked in her favor. That works in her benefit. But we would have skipped over that had I just been like, oh, okay, it's hybrid. Forget it. You know?
Yeah. I ran into that chances. Too with a role that said like on-site. And the recruiter's like, no, it's remote. I'm like, all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it. And sometimes they say on-site too. So you never know also.
And I'll share my sentiments about this. And you said something about this earlier. But the job market. We see so much on Twitter about the job market is bad, it's trash, which in a sense, I get that sentiment. But what I'm seeing is it's really harder just for people who don't have the experience.
Yeah.
For experienced individuals or people that's got 5 to 10, 10 to 15 years, that's got a solid network, there's no shortage of recruiters following their DMs or interviewing. It's the other people competing with the people who've been sold. It's all the dream. Hey, it's a cybersecurity shortage. There's a million jobs out there that's not filled, which is totally false.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where all the entry-level people are struggling. Every entry-level person, most of them, depending on what path they want to go, but they're all doing the same thing. And that's the issue that they run into. They look like everybody else's resume, so they don't have anything to set them apart. So that is where the benefit of having coaching or a mentor comes into play, because they can tell you the stuff that those courses that you buy not telling you.
Yeah. In regards to that too, entry level is not always entry level too. Like, they'll say entry level, but they already want you coming off the back with experience. So I piggyback. Obviously my clients are, I do have some that are already in the GRC field and they just want on the job assistance. But the ones that are like transitioning over or they're doing a career swap, I'm like, let's strengthen your foundation. Let's make sure you have that strong GRC principles under your belt and your concepts. It could be hard landing a job, but your job is to at least get in the door. I also have a Google spreadsheet that I had. It's still up for referrals, right? So I have people who are referral ambassadors, so they're offering referrals to their job, and then people who are looking for referrals, so they sign up. We can't control our network.
I've been working.
Can you hear me? Oh, that was weird. So we have people that are looking for positions and people that refer to positions. And I always say networking is great. And it's who you know all the time and possibly not always what you know. And if you're finding a hard job, if it's a hard job for you getting a job and it's entry level, consider taking like additional courses in between looking for positions. Get a certification that you don't have if you're looking for that position. That practical experience is invaluable. And sometimes once you get into that interview process, you may not interview well, or you need to brush up on your interview skills, or you're not really exemplifying how you know that information, how you know that material. I feel like the hardest part about the job search part is having that recruiter pull your resume. We've got GRC now, we've got AI now, everyone's got perfect resumes, everyone looks outstanding on paper. The biggest issue you might have is maybe your information is not parsing when it uploads, that might reject or different other reasons, but look for those opportunities to gain that hands-on experience. Keep a brag sheet of things that you've done and turn your projects into actual things that you've done on the job. I know people are like, oh, I can't volunteer, I can't do internships because I'm not getting paid, I don't have time to do that. Understood, that's perfectly fine. But network. You keep networking, you keep doing what you have to do, join professional organizations, attend conferences, meetups, networking events, GRC professionals, anywhere else that you can, and just expound that where you can until you get where you have to go. Because entry level does not always mean entry level. They want you to have experience coming out the bat. They want you to have this cert, that cert, and it may not always be entry level. The jobs are there. It's a terrible market, absolutely. But you have to find other ways to make up for that in the meantime, in a sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's why I was telling a client earlier. He was telling me about how good his internship was going. He got an IAM internship. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him how he was saying, yeah, I've been searching for entry-level cybersecurity jobs and I haven't seen none. I said, he already had some experience, but he was doing some like mail stuff like Amazon, mm-hmm. but it was like not super technical. But I was like, at least you had some experience. I was like, so technically you shouldn't be applying for like entry anyway. You should be applying for like mid-level type stuff. But I was like, mm-hmm. you're seeing firsthand how like a lot of these jobs take different aspects of other jobs in this job. So that's why it's like fully, hey, no experience. That's why they want somebody with like sometimes some experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell y'all, it's like keep fighting. It's most of the time it's timing. Everybody's timing is different.
Yeah. And it's not always you. I always tell them all the time, it's easier said than done. I've been unemployed and looking for jobs for a year. It's not always you. It could be ghost postings. It could be a position that's backfilled already. They're trying to go ahead and do this. And I tweet about it all the time. Obviously, we can't force anyone to pull a resume, but the best thing that we can actually do is network, reach out, see if you can get job referral. That's why I'm big on trying to have a community. I have a little community on Twitter that's growing for job referrals, trying to get that up and going. But I do have that document where people are able to request referrals for a position that they see. And if you're able to provide a referral for your job or your company, that we appreciate that as well. And that's just the most that you can do. And you just keep applying. You tweak, critique, and apply again. I made a joke the other day about if at first you don't succeed, change your email and apply again. It's funny, but I remember I did something for a client and like it auto rejected. I barely sent it through, and within 30 seconds it just rejected. So I had to create another email, and then I did it again. And then a recruiter reached out, I think the following week, I don't know what rejected it. It was the same resume, tweaked the bullet points, and just did it again. It was just trial and error.
That's happened to me before. Like I applied to a hospital and like 20 minutes later, sorry. I was like, what? I'm in the area.
Yeah. Like, how did you, anything. And even being from recruiting, I saw things were going to a different, like at Amazon, they were going to a different, like a different pile or file. If you didn't answer the EEOC questions, or you didn't put, if you were a US citizen or you skipped a question, they don't put it in like a completed section. It's in like a different part of it. It was weird, but I can see how information and your stuff can get lost in piles of things or just auto reject like that. But there's still humans that are still looking at your resume and taking their time and scanning and skimming to see, still putting that work, but keep trying, keep applying, just do what you can do every day.
Yeah, 1,000%. So I want to ask you two questions. This question is, what's a question that I didn't ask you that you would have liked me to ask you? I guess I do what it is too, because I didn't ask.
That's a great question. I don't know. I'm trying to think like any interviews that I've had. Maybe. I don't know. Still thinking. Oh, that's the one. It's a good one.
Yeah. I know what I didn't bring up.
Oh, what?
The conversation was so good, I forgot to ask about money.
Oh.
Yeah, I forgot to ask about money.
My favorite part.
Yeah. I've seen some like really good like GRC type of role salaries before. And it's not necessarily about what you make or whatever, but I guess what type of jump did you experience from technical recruiting at a FANG to jumping into GRC?
So technical recruiting, and I will honestly say that actually was a very good amount. As a technical recruiter, I think I touched, when I first started, I was at 110. And that was coming from, I was a fraud analyst at 55.
Oh yeah, that's a big jump.
At American Express, 55, and then I did that. So that also was like, no, maybe I did do a right jump, because at that time I needed, compensation mattered. So that's what took precedence over anything. And then I was like, let me go back to what I want to do. So that was good. And then I would say the biggest jump I made was about close to 100,000, because when you become more of a subject matter expert, and go on the consulting side. You just go on over to consulting and you really know your frameworks and you really can sell on how you've transformed a lot of business things in units and made successful things happen and avoided this and that. You get a lot more. And then that's when you get into negotiation. But because there's wiggle room, whether they tell you this is a cap or this is what we're able to do with equity, there's always wiggle room. Yeah. So it was about $100,000+, like $220,000, $250,000, my highest. My aim one day is to touch 300, 350, you know, because it's out there. When you can actually search it. I saw on LinkedIn the other day, it was a $280,000 GRC manager or GRC. I think it was like a GRC manager or director of management, GRC. And you would lead a team. I think it was like three teams you'd actually lead. And it was all framework based. It was on site, framework based. It was somewhere in, I think, New York. But they're out there. If you like to job hop, and that's absolutely there. And even in other countries too. United Kingdom, the money's different, but they still pay well. It's a really paying career field without the headache of, I've done technical too. I've done DevOps engineering. Long story. And that's another bag too, to DevOps engineering. Yeah, DevOps engineering. Ka-ching. But those two together, yeah.
Now, I probably think most GRC professionals who have a technical background are probably like the best, just because know the ins and outs of kind of what needs to be done here, and then at a high level what they need to do, and they can speak and talk and get the respect of the engineers as well, mm-hmm. stakeholders. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. So I know what I'm gonna title this.
But, is there, I'm trying to think, when I was looking for a position, is there, I don't think I've actually seen a position for GRC under 150, 140. I don't think, like, when I was like, especially for my clients. And so obviously chief compliance officers, that's 200,000, and mm-hmm. vice president, VPs, and director of risk management. But when you say things like, that's why I said, don't get caught up in titles. A director of risk management at a position I saw from my client, it was not the regular scope of a was not a lot of work that I would assume would be for the actual position. It was actually really, they were just really responsible for identifying, analyzing, and partially mitigating risks. They would work alongside a team that would actually do the mitigation, but they just needed to identify and analyze. And really and truly to direct that for 200, I think it was between the minimum, and the max was like 320, 330. But things like that, of that nature, just working closely with different departments to develop risk management for that amount, that's cake. So I always read that job scope, because it might be light.
For sure. Listen, United, or it was either Change Health with CISO, never had a security mm-hmm. job before being a CISO. So I'm like, apply to everything.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Real quick, what would be three things you want to lead the audience with?
What are three things that what?
What would be three things that you would want to lead the audience with?
Three. It's very difficult for an unsimple person like me.
Such a Capricorn.
Treating. Number one. Let's see how I can sum it up. Have a proactive approach, right? Everything is constantly evolving. Continuously learn, study, seek more information. Studying is never done. I've never not picked up a book. I'm never not on a course. I know my friends call sometimes and they're like, oh, what you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm studying. Dang, girl, when do you not study? Audio books, reading, but I'm just studying. And maybe I should just reading, but I'm always just brushing up on some information, right? Just stay ahead of that. Let's see, number two. I wonder if I wrap that into number two. I would say commit to excellence. By that, maybe that ties into the first one, but make a plan. So by committing to excellence, have a solid plan and follow through with that solid plan, right? You can learn and do, but if you're not following alongside a plan, what are you actually doing with that? Commit to finishing the job. Whatever your goal is, achieve that goal. No matter how long it takes, it's not a rush. Don't rush anything. Stop following this person's path. That everyone's path is unconventional. There's no right way to do anything. Your way is going to be the correct way. And number three, as my good friend would say, she knows who she is. Do the work. That goes alongside synonymously with committing yourself to excellence. No one out here is going to do it for you. We're sorry that you may be going through this or going through that, but at the end of the day, do that work because it's not going to get done for you. It's a lot of things out here that take time, that take dedication. No one's going to be out here to hold your hand, to do the work for you. You got to do the work to see the results. That's the only way that you're going to see results is if you do the work. And as long as you do the work, you'll get a great outcome. And those are my three things that I will leave.
Bet. So where can the audience follow you at?
Ooh, they can follow me on Twitter X. Aria Imagined, A-R-I-A, Imagined, I-M-A-G-I-N-E-D. That's me.
Bet. I'll have all the information in the description as well as where you can kind of contact her if you want some GRC help. But yeah. Y'all already know how y'all can keep it with me, and y'all know what I like to say. So every appearance or whatever podcast I'm on, I always say, what is the last page of the rule book say? If you don't read this rule book, your head will be shaved. That's what I always say. But until next time, let's stay textual and we out. Peace.